Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. Now I'll be joined by my co-host, Mike Neff, momentarily to discuss a playoff weekend of NASCAR racing at Richmond Raceway. Joe Gibbs Racing dominated the weekend, and particularly the Cup race on Saturday night, which saw Martin Truex Jr. spin and win late in the race to get the sixth victory of the season. Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin weren't far behind, finishing second and third, and though crossing the finish line in fourth, Eric Jones was disqualified about an hour or so after the race for having an issue with the rear toe of the car. Christopher Bell dominated the Xfinity Series race on Friday night, leading the most laps in a single event since Ryan Blaney led 252 at Iowa Speedway in 2015. With the recent dominance of the 20 team, is Bell the clear-cut favorite for the championship come Homestead? And also we'll talk a little IndyCars. Joseph Newgarden captured his second IndyCar Series championship over the weekend at Laguna Seca for Team Penske. But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Richmond with Neff. All right, Neff, we're recording this pretty instantly after the race this weekend at Richmond. We're doing it on a Sunday instead of usually on our Tuesday or Wednesday. But a lot to talk about because Martin Truex Jr. went back-to-back for the first time in his career, sweeping the first two round playoff races. But Joe Gibbs Racing Neff dominated this race, led over 300 laps between the four cars, and they crossed the finish line 1-4, but ultimately only finished 1-3.
And dead last.
And dead last. What's your take? Because Truex had a hell of a car.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and I'm not ready to crown Truex a big short track guy yet, but he's gone back-to-back at Richmond, so he definitely has that monkey off his back. He's good at getting monkeys off his back. I honestly thought Kyle was going to give him a run there. I fully expected another caution, kind of with about 20 or so to go, right about the time that they were really mixing it up, and it didn't happen, and so the Once he got by Kyle, I didn't think there was any chance. I thought Martin had it covered. But I thought it was a decent race. I mean, Richmond for years was my favorite track on the circuit. It's kind of slipped a little bit, but it almost got back to that. And it was where, I mean, back in the day, Ricky Rudd with Harvick and his little yip yip mouth. that was back when you literally would. All the passing that went on was like Newman and Jones was on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
He would take 20 laps to make a pass. You'd gain an inch and lose an inch, and because the guy on the bottom couldn't use the full track, the guy on the top didn't have as good a grip on the high line, so it was a true test of hitting your marks perfectly and laying down perfect laps to make passes. And while we didn't quite get to that level yet, I thought it was a really competitive, good race. Guys could pass. It took a while, but they could pass. And ultimately, the thing that has made me happy of late, the last two or three races, is that tires are actually falling off. And I've been saying it all season that Goodyear knew they had to go conservative because of the high downforce package. Because we all saw what happened at Indy the first time the car tomorrow went there and they had the tire debacle. We couldn't have that. So they had to go conservative with extra hard tires, but they finally are loosening it up and we're getting tires that are falling off. So I'm hoping when we go to the Gen 7 car that I'm hoping it's going to be the same kind of downforce numbers so we can stick with this progression of tires. But I mean, I would give the race a solid B+, maybe even an A-. I thought it was that good. Sadly, and it's just the nature of the beast now, we don't get a lot of cautions. And I don't know that we're ever going to get back to a lot of cautions because of high downforce.
Yeah, well said. Interesting race because, like you said, not many cautions, only three outside of the two stage breaks. One of them involving Truex when he was dumped by Ricky Stenhouse there late. Ricky was on fresh tires, and
dumped is a bit of a tough.
I mean, he slid his tires.
He lost control on the bottom and
dumped him.
It'd be different if he just sailed it in and wrecked him. I mean, he overdrove the corner a little bit and unfortunately slid up into the leader. It definitely wasn't intentional.
Correct.
That's where The word dump means, usually in my mind, means it was intentional.
All right, we'll agree to disagree, but Truex was none too but, pleased, and he only lost.
I tell you that, whether he dumped him or he got dumped.
Yeah, Truex only, he only lost three positions off that and then pitted and gained two of them back, so he restarted second. And, you know, you said he's, you're not going to consider him a like a great short track racer yet. He has won back-to-back races now, and I'm looking at his stats right now, and in the past seven races at Richmond, he's led 109 laps or more in six of them. So when it comes to Richmond, he's pretty dominant, even though he's only got the two wins. I think back to the 2 years ago, Kyle Larson's last win. It was then the cutoff race for the regular season. Dominated that race, led 198 laps, and then crashed in overtime on the final lap. I think Denny Hamlin wrecked him, and then Larson got by for the win. That was a cool finish. But with this race, not necessarily a cool finish, but he just had a great long-run car, and he chased down Kyle there towards the end. Kyle had a pretty good car, too. Led the most laps in the race, 202 laps. And, you know, only three drivers led in this race, those two and Brad. And Brad led a lot from the pole. So it was hard to pass, at least for the lead. But if you had a good car, you could definitely get it done.
Yep.
So what's your take, though? Because at the time when the checkers flew, Joe Gibbs Racing, you know, they've been dominant on short tracks for a long time, specifically Richmond. So Kyle's got a lot of wins there. Denny's got a lot of wins. And in the post-race, in the media session, they both kind of complimented each other. Kyle said when he came over in 2008 to Joe Gibbs Racing, he really complimented Denny Hamlin because Hamlin was really good. At the time, hadn't won yet at Richmond, but they've leaned on each other since. And, man, they've won a ton of races there. Kyle's won six or seven. Hamlin's won three. Truex has won two. And Eric Jones was fourth in F last night, and we'll get into the little debacle post-race with the tech inspection. Post-race. But, you know, they finished one through four originally. So, I mean, that's a good day for an organization. In theory, they finished one through three for the third time this year.
Yeah, but you kind of harken back to Talladega last year with SHR, which was a little different animal because of being the super speedway deal where they could kind of line up and work together. This is more just the functionality of the cars. And they have definitely got a package figured out that works at Richmond. And we've seen it all pretty much all season that JGR has been the team to beat. And I think they just have been a little more emphatic about it over the last month or so that they're really kind of ramped up for the playoffs. And it appears as though they're going to be the ones to beat. So we'll see how this plays out. The Roval coming up. I feel bad for Jones because he's got to win. But the rest of them, I don't think there's any challenge. Kyle's already locked through. Martin's locked through. So two of the four are already in. Denny's in no danger. So no. Three of the four are going to be in the final 12. And I don't see any reason to think they won't make the final eight, if not the final four. So it's definitely JGR's sandbox, and the rest of them are playing in it right now. I'm curious to see what Penske does. Penske started the year really strong and has kind of fallen off, and they definitely need to step up. I was really shocked at how poorly Logano did Saturday night. I mean, he ended up having a halfway decent finish, but for most of the race, he seemed out to lunch, and Richmond has been a really strong track for them for years.
Yeah. You know, you hit on a couple points there. We'll get into the Penske point, but as far as Joe Gibbs Racing, 15 wins this year, Neff, in 28 races. So that's obviously more than 50%. I talked to Denny Hamlin earlier this year. He said if we can win more than 40% of the races this year, we should win the championship, or at least, you know, be the front runners. And they're well on their way. That's Truex's sixth win of the year, second straight, Neff. And, you know, neither of us originally had him in our championship four. And obviously, if we go back and change, if you know, 2 weeks ago, maybe we would put him in if we knew he was going to get this hot. But, you know, anything can happen, as we've seen in the playoffs over the past 5 years under this format. But this 19 team, I mean, they've been hot and cold this year. Entering the playoffs, they were cold. Now they're hot. It's a dangerous duo, Neff, with him and Cole Pern.
They are. They're good at mile-and-a-half tracks. So, you know, we got a couple of those still in the playoffs, so that's important. And they just, they can be streaky, and right now they're on a hot streak. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see them go win the Roval. You know, Truex has proven to be one of the best road racers in the sport. So, it wouldn't be shocking to have them go do that. But we've talked about it before. I don't think, you can talk about Kyle Busch all you want. I don't think anybody in a garage hates to lose more than Cole Pearn. If you ever see Cole Pearn after a loss, he is the most miserable human being you can imagine. And that fire and that determination drives that whole team. And I've heard Martin talk about it before, that he is almost more driven to not disappoint Cole than he is to win the races. And the fact that Cole elicits that drive and respect out of that whole team, I think, is really what sets them apart. And now that you're down to 8 races to go and are guaranteed to be in the last 7 of them, you got to watch out for them. I'm with you. I'm surprised. They did not look like it as they were coming into the playoffs, but they have absolutely thrown down the gauntlet now that they're the team to beat.
Yeah, in post-race yesterday, as we recorded Sunday, Cole mentioned that they had a lot of speed coming into the playoffs. They had, I think he said, a flat tire at Bristol. I can't remember the issue. They got wrecked on pit road 10 laps into the race at Indy. Darlington had a fast car and something happened. And he was mentioning all these weird things that kind of came up and snake bit them to a degree. They're hitting on, and we've seen this. I mean, they won 4 out of 8 races earlier in the year, and now they've won 2 in a row. So there's their 6 wins. They've come in 10 race spans pretty much, over a 10 race span. So yeah, this 19 team's dangerous for sure. They've made the championship 3 out of the past 4 years, and they're definitely looking to make it 4 out of the past 5 coming into this year. So great run for that team, for sure. And good for Truex for kind of not losing his cool and rebounding from that spin, because, I mean, that was pretty late in the going. It was lap 316, so 85 to go, and he came back from, like I said, 4th to get the victory. But
and it was cool that he made a shout-out to Danny Sullivan out of it, too. That was kind of neat, because you don't always picture somebody, in this sport at his age remembering something that went on in IndyCar in 1985.
Right, and I've also, when a car spins out, usually there's some smoke. Just a single car spin, I've never seen that much smoke for a single car spin. He burned it down. He was like doing a burnout to get it back going. So good job for all the drivers not hitting him. Obviously, he was the leader when that happened. So Kyle Busch, Hamlin, Brad, they're all near. Kudos to Truex for getting the victory. Neff, you brought up Penske, and I do want to dig into that a little more. Because Logano, for instance, he started 28th, finished 11th, but there was times where he was close to 2 laps down. He had Go Fast outrunning him with Corey LaJoie, and Corey was having a good run early in the race, and he got a lot of TV time, too, for that, in the top 20, top 21. So, but that's not good when you're Team Penske running behind Go Fast.
No, definitely not.
And then also, Ryan Blaney, he'll tell you straight up, he hates Richmond. And he finished 17th. I guess that's good news because it's his best finish at Richmond. But the bad news is also he finished 17th and lost points to the cut line. And then you had Brad Keselowski, who was on the other side of the spectrum, led 89 laps from the pole and finished 4th, ran in the top 5 pretty much all day, except for when they had a bad pit stop early on, but rocketed through the field. So it's interesting because, like you said, Penske started off the year pretty good, winning 2 of the first 3 races, 3 of the first 6, and since then it's kind of been, not downhill, but, I don't know, kind of downhill.
Yeah, I mean, they've been off. I mean, there's no other way to say it. They've been off a beat from where they started the year, and I don't know, I feel like that move at Vegas, when they went under the hood and tweaked Brad's car and kind of brought it to life, I mentioned it in a podcast that week. That was one of those kind of championship type moments. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like that gave them impetus for this week. And that may be why they were better off than Joey was at Richmond. We'll see how the Roval goes. Remember that Brad was leading and was the Pied Piper that took all the lemmings into that turn one disaster. Heartburn
turn.
So we'll see how he does this time around. But there's got to be pressure. And now that Joseph Newgarden just won the IndyCar championship, that pressure is going to ramp up even a little bit more. But, they've got the resources. They've got the talent. It's just they've gotta pick it back up to where they were if they are gonna rattle Sabres all the way to finish with the JGR guys.
For sure. Now I do want to talk about, we're probably, you know, pretty in depth on this, about Erik Jones, because he finished fourth and obviously had a terrible finish last week. You know, getting stuck in second gear, going, I think 13 laps down or 15 laps down, finishing, I believe, 36th. So he came in to Richmond 26 points back. He qualifies 16th. So, you know, that was way off of his Joe Gibbs Racing teammates who qualified 4th, 6th, and 18th. So he was down from the beginning. And then also, you know, he made his way through the field. He finished in the top 10 in both stages, 4th in stage 2. Now, ultimately, because of the post-race inspection failure, he didn't get those points. So, Neff, what's your takeaway from this? Because he failed for having – he went through the OSS. All 16 playoff cars go through the OSS during the playoffs. Which was good to know, or, you know, good to note from managing director Jay Fabian after the race. And they fouled for going through with something in the rear being unaligned.
Yeah, they had toe in the rear end. There's, as there is with everything on these cars, there's tolerances.
Correct.
And the rear ends of these cars have become so sophisticated that you can change camber and you can change toe with devices on the rear ends. It used to be in the day that it was a solid tube and you would have to like heat it up and bend it in order to put some toe in the car, put some camber in the car, but they're now able to actually adjust that into the rear ends, and that's why they have tolerances now, because basically it gives you rear steer. You know, if you're trying to get the car to go around a corner and you can throw some toe in it, It'll push the car rear end one way or the other, which can help you line up, can help give you drive off, can give you side force. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to it. So there's value in it. A lot of us remember, I want to say it was 7 or 8 years ago when we first saw Roush discover the whole crab walking thing, and cars were going down the straight with the rear end like a foot out of line from the front of the car. And that was when they first really brought this in. And so it was interesting to me because Jones was talking about it most of the race of how loose his car was. And they had this car over-adjusted. So I can't even imagine if he didn't have that in how loose his car would have been. So it helped him for sure. And that's why, again, they tech them all. And I'm glad to hear they tech all 16. I don't know that I remembered that last year. But I'm glad they do. And unfortunately for Jones, he went from being in a situation where he almost controlled his own destiny to a situation where he's got to win a race now. And he's got one race to do it, and it's a road course. So it's a tall order for sure. And I know he's got to be disappointed. I know the team's got to be bummed out. But that's why we tech them, because they got to be legal. Everybody's playing with this super tight rule book that we have now, and you can't have anybody going outside the box. And they went outside the box, and they paid the price.
Yeah, for sure. I talked to Erik after the race for a few minutes as he stood around in the bullpen, and he was pretty pumped. I mean, he came in 26 points out, and I feel like last week, you know, he had to have two almost near-perfect races to get in, and then he did it in one. And he was 3 points out when the checkered flag flew because you had guys like 200 cars of William Byron and Alex Bowman have bad days. And then there was other cars that were run outside the top 10 for a lot of the day, too. And so he was sitting pretty, like you said, controlling his own destiny almost going into the Roval, a place where he really struggled at last year. So now he is in a must-win situation. And it, you know, NASCAR brought Jay Fabian in. He was asked, you know, what typically causes something like this, this mishap. And he said any number of things. There's fairly critical measurements on the rear end alignment, rear realignment that have to be followed. So there's any number of things that the team could or could not have done to make it foul. And they mentioned that was a standard process after a race. And then also he was asked about, you know, why do you need the talons on the rear of the car? And he said the rear wheel steering alignment is important as a critical factor in downforce. So kind of like you were saying, Neff. It's an aero benefit to get more skew in the car, so we keep those parameters pretty tight. So that, you know, then they bring all 16 cars through, and blah blah blah. So, unfortunately, they got caught. If you know you're gonna get caught, why do it? I guess when you know you're gonna get, there's no random now for the playoff drivers. What I'm trying to say, right. You're gonna go through. So, bummer for him, but. You think he could win the Roval possibly?
I mean, he might win at this level now. You know, years ago, there was four or five guys that were going to be your road course winners most every time we rolled into one. But now, of 38 guys, 39 guys that are running pretty regular, I would say 30 of them could conceivably win a race at a road course. I mean, it's just everybody has ramped up their road course racing to that level, be it from sim racing, be it from going and doing one-offs in sports cars or Daytona and things like that. But just a lot of people are fine-tuning their road course racing, and most all of them now have got a shot. So he's in equipment that's capable of it. I think he's legitimately got a shot. It's a long shot, but he's got a shot. Who knows? I never would have picked Blaney to win a Roval last year.
Right.
You know, I didn't really picture, he's not somebody that you think of as being a hot shoe on road courses, but things lined up right for him and he got it. And I had completely forgotten how insane that last lap was at the Roval last year. And they showed it during that Richmond race. And it brought back the memory of Jeffrey Earnhardt sitting there on a front stretch and Kyle Larson, like, literally, like, in a skid plate car. You know, he couldn't drive it straight, so he's just bouncing it off the walls to get it around the track. And the fact that he got that thing in and advanced by a point was just so ludicrous. And I'm like, I hope this year's Roval is half as much fun as last year's was.
And obviously that all started pretty much because of that late incident where Keselowski, like you said, led the train into the heartburn turn right into the wall and caused a huge pileup. And Larson was on the outside of him when that happened. So, Larson almost won the Roval last year. Yeah, like you said, Blaney, I don't think we would have even picked him to win the Roval on the last corner last year. Because, you know, Truex, we brought him earlier. I think he's the best road course driver in the Cup Series right now. I think it's kind of hard to dispute that. Maybe Kyle. But yeah, he was leading. Jimmy ran out of talent and went for the win because he hadn't won all year. And the two spun, and Truex, I think, got eighth place out of it. Jimmy had to come to stop because he missed the corner, finished 14th, and Blaney got the win. Jamie McMurray finished second. I think AJ Allmendinger was third. So obviously, those two can race on road courses. But very interesting race. So anything can happen, is what I'm trying to say. And Jones. At least at Watkins Glen's never finished outside the top 10 at the Cup level, has a pair of top fives. So, who knows? But I want to get your take, Neff, because obviously these teams are pushing it all year, and we were talking offline about this a little bit. We tech these cars so much.
Too much.
Yeah, and too much. And so probably, I don't know, 4 hours spent at the track every week per team is dedicated to teching these cars, getting in line, fixing it if you fail. I mean, is there a right way of doing this? Because you could say that you could do them just pre-qualifying and then post-race, just so we have a measurement or a guideline of, you know, making sure everyone's in the same zip code, I guess you could say. And then post-race, just making sure, like yesterday, that everything's all right.
I mean, I've argued it for years that we, A, tech them too much, but B, we don't need to tech the entire car every tech session. Everybody's playing by the rule book. Everybody's bringing them up there legal. And most of the time, if 40 guys roll through, you may get 15 or 20 that get dinged on one thing. And they fix it on the very first pass back through and we're good. There's two, maybe three cars that have serious difficulty getting through on any given weekend at some point in time. But for the most part, of all the crap they look at on these cars, 99% of it is legal every time. So why can't we just, and I've always said, spin a roulette wheel and have the, when you get to the racetrack, have the guys that finish first through third, the crew chiefs from first through third of the previous race, go up and spin a wheel, and whatever it lands on, that's what we tech. And then before qualifying, the three fastest guys from practice go up there and spin the wheel, and that's what we tech. And then before the race, the three fastest qualifiers spin the wheel, and that's what we tech. And then in post-race, tear them down. Tech them as much as you want to tech them. I got no problem with that. But the tech process for practice qualifying in a race could be cut down to literally under an hour for everybody, instead of almost 2 hours, if not longer, to get these things through. And I just, there's so much time wasted in tech that could be dedicated to practice, could be dedicated to fan availability, could be dedicated to guys just being able to relax. And it seems to me, and it seems to most of the competitors that I ever talk to, that we spend way too much time in tech. And I've argued with Brett Bodine about this many times, because Brett Bodine used to be a car owner. And he used to race back there. We talked about this last week, the different levels of the field. And he used to be one of those guys back there racing around 26th. And his argument is, I want to know that the guy that I'm racing from 25th through 30th is legal. And I'm like, you're all passing the same tech inspections, and you know at the end of the deal that you can be pulled out and you can be teched, so why would you cheat? I hope someday your rational mind will take over that, but the more I'm around it, the more I don't think so. I think that I hate to say it, but it's almost like they feel like they justify their existence as officials by teching the crap out of them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of your points. I definitely agree on, you know, teching as much as you can after the race. And I say that because, you know, a lot of stuff can happen during the race. Teams can work on their cars, and we've seen it happen. This was the first Cup disqualification of the year, and it came at a big time, obviously, and for a driver that was fighting for his playoff life. But let's go back to the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series earlier this year. Like 3 weeks in a row, I think, in the Xfinity Series, and I think it was two Xfinity One truck, back-to-back-to-back weeks, one of the three cars that they teched failed, or trucks. If that's the amount that's failing in consecutive weeks, or, you know, pretty regularly, I truly feel like you should tech every car. And I say that because definitely the playoffs. So I'm happy they're doing the 16 in the playoffs. They definitely should do that. But during the regular season, like that, those points could count. Like, say you're, I don't know, Alex Bowman or someone, just making up a name, you're 15th in points and you're cheating. You know you're cheating, but you're not the random car, but you're gaining these points. So, I don't know. I just feel like it could play a big factor, obviously, and it has. And you've got to push the edge in NASCAR in racing, period, in all motorsports, or you're going to be behind. So, that'll never happen. And it would take forever, so it definitely probably shouldn't happen. But I don't know. I don't know what's the right way of going about this. But I agree, you know, to some of your points. And it's just always been there, and it's always going to be a hassle.
And in all honesty, I know it truly happens. But probably 3 or 4 times in a year does a team legitimately cheat.
Right.
Like, they go in knowing full well that they have something that is outside of tolerances, and if it gets checked the proper way, it's going to get dinged. Most of the time, they've got it right on the edge, and if something gets lined up a little wacky or something in the laser thing, it throws it off. And that's the part that has confused me. And we saw it with Harvick, I want to say, last year, where they failed 3 times in a row, and they were trying to, like, they literally had, like, Bondo out and were messing with the quarter panels at the rear of the car. And Tony Gibson was telling me that basically you fail that first time, half of the time, maybe even more, you could roll right back around, go through again, and pass. That there's that the laser system can read things slightly off and throw you into a fail status. But once you start messing with it, most of the time you're having to beat on things or heat things up to get them to move. Once you start doing that, other stuff moves.
Right.
And you then are kind of like chasing your tail. So I don't think that it happens 3 or 4 times in a season. We saw it with Chad Knaus and Jimmy at Daytona when they had the rear window that actually, when you went through and made a wedge adjustment, it actually pushed the window up. I mean, they built that thing specifically to do that. Todd Barrier was a great one. I'll never forget when they were at Talladega and they built a gas tank that looked like it was full and a 22-gallon tank, but in reality it held like 6 gallons. And they had built some extra little contraption in there to just hold enough fuel. So when the officials tested it, however they did to see that it was the right size, it would pass. But in reality, it was way smaller, so they saved that weight of not having a full tank of gas. So, there have been guys. I mean, remember the Michael Waltrip jet fuel deal? But for the most part, everybody's just pushing the edges. And I feel like we spend way too much time to catch the handful who are off by a thousandth of an inch somewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, that's so minuscule. And it does make a difference, like, don't get me wrong, but it's so minuscule. You can't even measure that. Like, that's why it's in a system. I agree with you. The tech process, maybe it needs to be looked at. And it's interesting how you said what Tony Gibson told you about how if you go right through a second time, that you'd probably pass. So, I don't know. That doesn't give a good light on the OSS system, in my opinion. But, I don't know. It seems like it's trending in the right direction as far as tech, but I feel like there's definitely room for improvement going forward. But Neff, you want to talk a little bit about some other drivers in the Cup Series who had good runs at Richmond?
Sure, that'd be lovely.
All right, so non-playoff drivers, Bubba Wallace, Neff, another top 15. It's his third top 15 in the past 5 races, and in the first 23 races, he only had 1, and that was a 15th place finish. So this 43 team, you know, we talked about him after he finished 3rd at Indy 2 weeks ago. It seems to be turning the corner a little bit, or at least, you know, starting to move up the ladder more consistently. Ran top 15 pretty much all night on Saturday night. And this, I don't know, Bubba, we know he can drive, and, you know, it's good to see they can finally show it on the track as well.
Yeah, and now they got to start focusing a little more on qualifying, I think, because they had a really crappy qualifying effort and had to rebound from it. We talked about it after Indy that they did some reorganizing over the summer. They've had some capital infusion into the team, and the end result is that they're making a turn and they're starting to run better. And, you know, we all love to see the 43 team doing well just because it's the king, even though, you know, I don't know how much of an ownership stake he even has anymore, but his name's still on the door. And we still want to see the king being a part and a successful part of this sport. So we're happy to see it. I'm glad to see that Bubba's doing it and he's getting it done behind the wheel. We've seen some opportunities for him to make some mistakes the last few weeks driving, and he hasn't. And I think that's speaking to his maturity and his knowledge and abilities are getting better. So I hope that we continue to see them run better and have better finishes. And who knows, we were talking off air about it, I still think if the stars align properly and the wind blew just right, you could see the 43 win a race.
Yeah, and I was on the other side of that spectrum, unless it's a super speedway race. I mean, like you said, it almost happened at Indy, so anything can happen for sure. It would have to be close to a miracle, I think, but who knows? I mean, anything can happen in racing, so nothing surprises me anymore. But Neff, after we recorded last week's podcast, like right after, within an hour, Daniel Hemric was announced that he will not be returning to Richard Childress Racing in 2020, which, you know, Tyler Reddick will probably be in the 8 car if they keep the 8 number, or if they go to the 31. So, I mean, that's the reports that Reddick will go there. But Daniel Hemric, you know, he hasn't had the best rookie of the season. He does lead rookie the year of standings over Ryan Preece. Just one top five at Talladega and a second top 10 at Pocono about a month and a half ago now. What's your take on this? Because, you know, we touted on this podcast, we think Hemric can drive. We've had him on the podcast last year. And it's surprising to see that they're giving up on him so early and not even bring him to the Xfinity Series next year as a viable option.
I was shocked. I really was. Because if anything, in the history of RCR, they have stuck with drivers longer than you would expect them to. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they have given drivers a very long time to develop and make mistakes and learn and become better drivers before finally cutting ties with them. And, I mean, I was shocked because, I mean, I was a little surprised that Daniel moved up without having won in a truck or Xfinity. I thought he should probably get a win down there, but he showed consistent improvement, took care of his equipment as best he could. You know, most anytime something happened, it wasn't his fault. And so it made sense him coming up. But now that he's up, I mean, I legitimately figured it would be 3 to 5 years before you would ever consider pulling a plug. And I don't, you know, I don't know any of the behind the scenes of this deal. I got to feel like there's pressure coming from sponsors of Reddick that want him to move up to the cup level. And so you got two cars and one of them's got the grandson in it. You know, they ain't booting him out of it. So unless they went to a 3-car team, and I don't think they're ready to do that, they had to let somebody go. So I feel bad. I feel really bad for Daniel because we've touted it before. I've known Daniel since he was running Legends, if not Bandoleros. And I've had nothing but praise for him. He's been a class act. He's great with the media, and he's got great talent. He's won a championship in super late models. He can wheel about anything, and I feel like it's an unfair shake for him. So now, where does he go? And I heard one crazy rumor that I don't even know if I should give credence to it, but in honesty, I could see him going to Front Row. I don't know how much that sounds like a step back, but in reality, if you look at it, I don't know how much that is versus a lateral move. And there's nothing else open at a bigger tier team. So it's probably going to be Front Row, or depending on how other seats shake out, he may end up in a lesser ride. But I hope he stays at the cup level. I hope he continues to prove his abilities and eventually gets another shot in some good equipment. The other thing that would be kind of cool to see would be if he took a step back and went down to Junior Motorsports for Xfinity, but I don't think he brings enough cash to get that ride, so I don't really picture that happening. So I wish him the best. I'm assuming, like you said, that Reddick's going to move into that seat. I think Reddick's ready, but you hate to see Daniel having to pay the price when he's been, you know, a solid rookie. And as you said, look, leading rookie of the year points, it seems unfair, but life is unfair. The funny thing is, nobody's roasting Richard Childress like they have been Bob Levine.
Yeah.
And you would absolutely think that Childress deserves every bit as much vitriol as Levine has been getting over the DiBenedetto deal.
That's a good point, too. But, I mean, if you look at the stats, while he was moving up, right, so he was always fast in trucks when he raced for Brad, never got the win, like you said. Had 13 top 10s and 15, 11 top 5s and 16 and 17 top 10s. I think it was at Chicago that year, so it was early September, it was playoff opener for Cup Series. They announced that he was going to run for Childress in 2017 for Xfinity. 7 top 5, 16 top 10s in 2017, his rookie season in the Xfinity Series. And he made it to the Championship 4. Now, last year, the second year in Xfinity, 16 top fives, 23 top tens, 4 poles, 440 laps led. That's 370 laps more than his rookie year. Finished 3rd in points. Average finish of 9th. So he's really consistent. Also, the Xfinity Series, and this year, too. If he was running the Xfinity Series this year, I think he'd have a couple wins. Just because it's, let's be honest, it's pretty top-heavy, and they're on out. I mean, he mentioned this in his media availability over the weekend at Richmond. Who else is there outside of the top three? That's pretty much what he said. So, I don't know. Stats-wise, I mean, he's behind Ty Dillon in points, who runs for Germain, which is obviously an affiliate of RCR. And he's 120 points behind Austin Dillon, and Austin Dillon's had a terrible year, especially this summer on. He's 22nd in points, and he's had 4 top 10s to Hemric's 2, but, I mean, that's it's not good to have 6 top 10s as a company, and you're not an elite company, per se, but you do, you know, you're one of the top Chevy companies, for sure. So, I don't know, Neff. It's a tough deal because it's so late. He said he found out last Monday, which would have been September 16th. That's pretty late to find out your future plans for the following year, and it's pretty short time frame to get sponsorship and to bring it to another team. So, I don't know if he'd have a cash flow to go to a top Xfinity team. Maybe the double zero opens, he goes there. I don't know, because there's not many top Xfinity rides either, if we look at it, and there's going to be a lot of guys returning to the Xfinity Series. So then does he go to trucks? I mean, it just kind of sprinkles down. He says he'll race anything. I personally don't think he'll go to front row, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. I wish him the best, too, because he's one of the most personable drivers in the garage area. Very nice to everybody, fans, media, whomever. So it's a tough situation for sure, but stats-wise, I don't know. It's hard to give up on a guy so early after 1 year, not even a full year. But like we said, Reddick is definitely ready. I think Reddick will definitely elevate that program. I don't know how much better he'll run than Austin Dillon. I would expect, just off, in my opinion, off talent, Reddick gets the most out of the car. Now, I do think, and I think he would tell you the same, it's going to be an adaption process, specifically with the new package this year, and that's why he's ran a couple races, but he's only run one race outside of the Daytona 500, so he finished top 10. But I don't know. I definitely think, even going into this year, I think Reddick would have been more ready than Hemric, in my opinion, for that ride. But it's a tough deal for sure, and it's tough to watch, but I think Hemric will land on his feet. I know he's a big believer in faith, so, yeah, I mean, we wish the best for him for sure.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't know that I'm sure Reddick will outperform Dillon yet. Don't forget, Dillon's a champion in trucks and Xfinity, so he, at the development levels, was able to get a lot out of vehicles, too. So it's just, I think RCR in general has been struggling since the Camaro, and it still seems like they're chasing their tails a little bit. But having the strength that they've had in Xfinity, hoping that'll make some things different when they get Reddick up to the Cup level, who knows. But in general, I think RCR being a successful team and contending for wins is good for the sport, because similar to Petty, having that 3 car and having the RCR brand running for race wins and running for titles is important. So whatever ends up happening there, I hope it ultimately translates into some wins. And as I said, I'm with you. I love Daniel. I think he's one of the best personalities in the sport, and just a genuinely, genuinely good dude. And I really hope that he lands on his feet somewhere, and we see him around for a long time, because I've enjoyed him since before he won the Legends Million, and it's been fun to follow his climb without a lot of money all the way to the top level, and I'm hoping he's able to stick it out.
Yeah, I didn't mean to discredit Austin Dillon at all there. Obviously, he's won a truck and Xfinity title, many races in both series. And this will get to our next point. The Xfinity Series, the top three are definitely ready. And I think Reddick's took his time in the lower series, and I think he's ready for the spotlight, and we've seen it this year. Although Richmond, could be contrary to that, because he'll tell you straight up he hates Richmond, and it looked like it on Friday night. But someone who doesn't hate Richmond, Neff, is Christopher Bell. He's won 3 out of 4 races there that he's competed in, and probably should have won the 4th and finished 2nd to Cole Custer. Dominating performance, 238 of 250 laps, on top of leading 154 out of the 200 last week at Las Vegas. He has a win percentage of 22 point, I think it was, what, 1 or 2? We looked at it earlier before we started recording. I mean, you know, we look, in your opinion, I know you've been high on him, obviously, since he's entered the series. You say he's the championship favorite. Obviously he's going to make it there, in my opinion. But he almost didn't last year. He had to win Phoenix. So anything can happen, like we stated earlier. But do you feel like he's the championship favorite?
I mean, right now you got to feel like he is. You know, Riddick won at Vegas on a mileage call, but the two team has seemed a little, I mean, not off by much, but it doesn't take much to be off. But I think they've been off just that little bit over the last month or so. And that is enough to give Bell the nod. Again, if Custer makes it to Homestead, you got to think that he's got a real shot. But Bell was the man at Homestead too. So I'm right now, I think he is. He has shown to consistently win and consistently run well. Jason Ratcliffe being on the box definitely doesn't hurt things. I mean, he's been through championship chases before.
At the Cup level.
Knows what it takes to get it done. So I think he's a definite benefit for Christopher. And, yeah, I'm with you. I think right now, after Richmond, you got to think that Bell's the favorite. But anything can happen.
Yeah, I still think it's a toss-up between the top three. I keep saying Cole Custer only because how he gets around Homestead, even though a lot of the race last year. But sticking to Bell, Neff, you know, we've touted this younger generation of drivers. And to be honest, I mean, you know, stats don't lie. They get to the Cup Series and they, not that they don't perform, but they don't get to victory lane. You still got your Kevin Harvicks, Kyle Busch's, Truex, Hamlin, you know, winning primarily most of the races. When do you feel like it's the last time someone was highly touted as Christopher Bell was going in the Cup Series next year?
I mean, you got to think Chase Elliott's right up there. Elliott was, and part of that comes from family name, but part of it also came from his success at the lower levels. I mean, winning the Snowflake, winning the Snowball, just running strong in everything that he was in. Mind you, most everything he was in was better equipment than everything he was running against. And that was why I always cautioned everybody, let's see what happens when he gets to the national level. And then he gets to the national level and showed in Xfinity and beat Harvick and beat Busch in Xfinity cars. And that was when I officially agreed to tout that he was going to be good, because he showed at that level that he was beating the Cup drivers that were the best at that level. So that's, I would say he's gotten that kind of pub. Before that, I would say probably Kyle Larson. I mean, Larson was obviously well touted. Eric Jones recently has been well touted as well. And again, I almost lump Eric Jones and Chase together. Both of them having success at the super late model level, not really running late models. And I honestly, it's curious, but I honestly feel like if we get somebody that's good in late models, we'll see somebody that'll actually win more when they get to the Cup level. Although I guess Larson won the K&N title, and that's a perimeter car, because that's where the thing is, super late models are not a perimeter chassis, and a Cup car is a perimeter chassis. And just give you a quick technical analysis, a perimeter chassis, if you draw a line straight down the middle of the car, all of the components of the greenhouse and the suspension and everything have to be equidistant from that center line going out to the sides. a super late model is a straight rail car, which means the left side where the driver is kind of bulges out a little bit. The right side is a straight rail. And if you draw a straight line down the middle of the car, things are not equidistant from that center line. And so it gives you the ability to make the car drive a lot better. And you'll get guys that'll argue it, but most guys will tell you driving a super late model is half as hard as driving a perimeter late model. And a perimeter car is what we run at the national levels, and that's why I feel like K&N guys that win championships should be better at winning at the national level than these guys that are good at super late models because of the fact that they've driven a similar chassis. And that's where we've seen the talent of Eric Jones, we've seen it of Chase Elliott, and even Kyle Larson. And they won, but they haven't won much. And that's where I'm curious, when Bell gets up here, is he going to be another Kyle Larson? Or is he going to be another Kyle Busch? And I guess we're going to find out. But he, right now, anything you put Christopher Bell in, he can win. And win a lot. And I think that's been the part that has impressed me the most, is at every level that he goes to, he not only wins, but he wins a lot. And I think that's going to be the differentiation of him to these other guys that have been touted, is that he can drive anything, and it's going to translate into a lot more wins, I think, at the Cup level.
Yeah, I agree with you on Chase. Chase came into the Cup Series in 2016, spent 2 years at Junior Motorsports, won the 2014 championship. And like you said, I think Darlington or Texas was his first win, then he won Darlington. And yeah, he was beating Harvick, Kyle Busch, all these top names right out of the bat. And he, you know, he earned his way up and spent 2 years, which is probably the right amount of time for, you know, spending the Xfinity Series level at when you're successful. And we've seen that with Bell this year. Had a ton of success last year, winning 7 races. He's matched that already with 5 races to go. And or 6 races to go, excuse me. So I mean, there's a very good potential or a very good chance he has 10 wins at the end of this deal. He won 3 of the 7 playoff races last year, made it to Homestead, didn't win the championship because he didn't have a good Homestead period. But yeah, he's I feel like truly he's probably one of the best drivers in the world. Only because we brought up this offline too. On Saturday night, he goes to Sandusky, Ohio, and in the first time in his car, in a sprint car, he goes out and wins. Now, we don't know who's been working on that car, if it's a team of his that he's, I know is with Chad Boat, who's also a dirt driver. So we don't know who's been working on it or whatever, but still, first time in that car, his car wins. I mean, that's incredible, in my opinion. So, and he's always touted Kyle Larson as his biggest competition, even though they haven't. I listened to a podcast with him, I don't know, beginning of this year, I think it was. And he said that they've never really got to race each other for a win on pavement. So he's looking forward to that, hopefully next year. And so, you know, on dirt, they've spent a lot of time racing against each other, big rivals. So, I'm excited for Bell Neff. I think if of all these drivers coming up, I think he's probably going to make the most noise off the bat.
I agree. I just feel like, I mean, and there's, you're getting rarefied air, but I look at him like Tony Stewart, you know, where he just, it doesn't matter what it is, he gets in it and he wins. And that doesn't guarantee at the Cup level you're going to do it. And right. I can point to him and I consider him a friend, but J.J. Yaley, everything up till Cup, that dude won everything. And if you don't know the history of J.J. Yaley, Google it. Because if you go back to his open wheel exploits, that dude won everything. Any open wheel race that is of any substance, J.J. Yaley has won it. He's the only guy with Tony Stewart to win the USAC Triple Crown in the same year. I mean, he's won the Copper Bowl, he's won Turkey Classic, he's won every big open wheel event outside of the Chili Bowl. And I still, to this day, think one of these days he's going to get to the Chili Bowl and win it, too. But it doesn't mean when you get in these full-bodied stock cars it'll happen. And JJ's run decent at the lower levels, too. But it's the cup level is a different animal. So we are going to see. But right now, in just watching from afar, I feel like Christopher Bell is the real deal, and he's going to be the next big superstar in this sport.
And ironically, Yaley's first team at the cup level is the team that Bell's contract under. So
there you go.
So obviously Joe Gibbs Racing. So I'm sure Bell would hope his cup career maybe turns out a little different than Yaley's, but you never know. And like we said, a lot of these guys who we've touted or that NASCAR has touted as the next real, you know, big thing. And we've talked about this on the podcast a lot. They haven't pulled through and won multiple races, or maybe they've won two races and that's it. Eric Jones, Ryan Blaney, Chase has won five, Larson's won five, Suarez hasn't won yet. There's so we got a lot of good talent, but they just gotta step up, I guess you should say.
Yep.
All right, Neff. Anything else NASCAR related before we get into a little bit IndyCar, because they had the championship race over the weekend at Laguna Seca.
Anything else NASCAR related? Well, I should probably give a shout out because by the time this airs, it's going to be the last shot we have, and it's kind of NASCAR related, but the Monday after the Roval, if you are headed to Charlotte for the Roval and can stick around, we are having a Mission Monday at Cabarrus Brewing Company for the Racing Brotherhood Foundation, which is the foundation that I run. If you have the opportunity to come out, I would greatly appreciate it. Trying really hard to get some drivers to show up, maybe do a little Q&A session. But for every beer that is sold from like 4 till 10 p.m., my foundation is going to get a dollar. And so if you can, if you're in the greater Charlotte area for the Roval and can stick around till Monday evening, we would love to have you stop by the Cabarrus Brewing Company for Mission Monday and help out a great cause. The Racing Brotherhood Foundation helps racers and their families in times of need. I just saw a couple more this weekend of one guy put his car in his trailer, found a fuel leak, and while he was working to try to fix it, it exploded, burned his trailer to the ground in his car, and he ended up in the hospital. Fortunately, most of his burns are first and second degree, so it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but still in the hospital and recovering, so we're going to try to help them out. Saw somebody else that got flipped and has a couple broken vertebrae, so it happens a lot at the lower levels. We don't have to worry so much about the guys at national level, but guys at the lower level need help when this kind of stuff happens, and that's our purpose. So the more we can get fans and racers to help us out, the more guys we can help out. So if you're in the Charlotte area on Monday, please stop by the Cabarrus Brewing Company, have a beer, have some laughs, and help out a good cause.
Good deal. Yeah, definitely check that out if you're in the Charlotte area next Monday, which is, what's the date for that?
September 30th.
September 30th. All right, Neff. September 22nd, Laguna Seca. Joseph Newgarden didn't win the race, but he won the championship for the IndyCar Series. His second championship, also winning in 2017. Won four races this year, seven podium finishes, two poles, led a career high in laps of 490. We don't talk a lot of IndyCar in here, but, you know, they for the, I think it was 14th straight year, they had the championship battle come down to the final race. Granted, a lot would have bad would have had to happen to Newgarden that hasn't this year in order for him to lose the title. But he finished 7th or 8th in the final and, you know, got his second championship for Team Penske.
Yeah, it was a great effort by that squad. Fun to watch Colton Herta win the race.
Yep.
Two wins this year for an 18-year-old. Jokingly after the race, he said because of his age, he's not going to be able to party to celebrate it. I don't know that I totally acknowledge that that's going to happen. I'm willing to bet they may break a rule or two. But if nothing else, they have a designated driver that's a pretty good wheel man. So he may be running them all home after the party. But, I mean, it's Penske. God, those guys. I think they said it was his 16th championship in IndyCar. I actually saw him smile briefly when Newgarden came over to shake his hand in victory lane. Penske smiled for 3, maybe 4 seconds, and then I have no doubt in his mind he's back to thinking about IndyCar next year and try to figure out how to win the Cup Championship, because that's just the way he is. But they are the flagship in the sport, and if you're going to win an IndyCar Championship and you don't drive for them, you're going to have to beat them. And it was a cool race. It was great to see him back at Laguna Seca.
Yeah,
it's been 15 years since they've been there. They said the line was backed up some 3 miles to get into the track. All the camping spots were booked out, so that was great to see. I know NASCAR gets a lot of grief about race attendance, and IndyCar for forever has been worse than NASCAR as far as attendance goes. It just doesn't really get pointed out. And so it is great to see them at a race that isn't the Indianapolis 500 getting a really good crowd, because that's been hard for them. But I feel like their sport in general, just like NASCAR, I think is on the climb and is coming back. Ratings are up. Interest is up. The discussions about it are up. So I think in general, it's a good thing. I love seeing Newgarden, super humble guy. And it was refreshing to see him talking post-race about the fact that the last lap was really hard because he was crying for most of the lap, knowing he was going to win the championship. So it's great when good things happen to good dudes, and he's definitely a good dude.
Yeah, like you said, drives for Penske, so the expectations are very high. And it was cool to see the outpour of emotion, you know, when he climbed out of the car, interacting with his team, his fiance, who I think he's getting married next week, and then his mother also. So, 4 wins this year, 7 podium finishes, like I said, and 2nd championship. So, pretty good season for Joseph Newgarden. Oh, and you mentioned the attendance there. That was really good. And I want to hit on one last thing, NASCAR. Richmond attendance, I was there, very good. I don't know what it looked like on TV, but I can tell you from being there, parking lots were full. And they've taken a lot of seats out over the past number of years, as is a lot of tracks. But from my opinion and what it looked like for me in the press box, ton of people at Richmond.
Yeah, saw some stuff on Twitter today about people trying to diss on the attendance at Richmond, and I'm with you. I disagree. Maybe early on in the race, the stands might not have been totally full. But by the time the race was 50 laps in, that place was packed out. I mean, I don't know if it was a sellout or not, but it was definitely fuller grandstands than we've seen, and that was great to see. Again, I feel like the auto racing in general, and NASCAR in particular, is rebounding and getting better. So I'm glad to see it. I hope we continue to see this upward trend, and we continue to get kids involved and kids interested. Speaking of getting kids interested, big brickbats to the jerk on Twitter that was calling out Kyle Busch about not coming over and talking to his 2-year-old. I mean, it frustrates me because I've seen all of these drivers, not just Kyle, all of these drivers go out of their way to try as be as interacting with the fans as they can, and to know the time demands on these drivers. And I know it's a bit of an excuse, but at the same time, he's going from one meeting to a media availability before the driver's meeting. And you've seen it as well as I have. If you're late for the driver's meeting, you go to the back of the field, so you can't be late. So these guys are rushing and trying to meet all these obligations that they have at the same time, trying to be interactive. And I love the fact that Kyle showed 3 other pictures of people that he stopped and talked to along the exact same walk. And the fact that the guy didn't really like try and call him over to take a picture or do an autograph. Kyle just waved and was walking, which these guys wave and walk all the time. So it wasn't that he was being rude. And I know Kyle gets a bad rap a lot. And yes, some of it is absolutely deserved, but a lot of it isn't. And I appreciate the fact that he and all these drivers do the best they can with the times that they have. And I hope and I continue to push NASCAR to force these teams to have an hour and a half or a two-hour block every race weekend where the driver is available to general fans, nothing hospitality-related, not having to have special access. They go to their merch hauler or they go somewhere outside the track, sit at a table, sign autographs. If you have to get in line at 5 in the morning to do it, that's on you. But to have them be there for an hour and a half or 2 hours with no other stipulation to it other than a fan has to get in line, I think would go a long way into helping build the fan base back in this sport.
And also, I mean, with everything that happened in Vegas and throughout the week this week, Kyle had answered a lot of questions. He was an easy target for people this week. So, you know, good for him to kind of put the guy in blast. Now, we're going to the Roval. I feel like Kyle Busch might be one of our predictions for the Cup race. Spoiler alert. But who do you got winning the Xfinity race?
I'm going out on a small limb and saying Chase Briscoe goes back-to-back. I think Briscoe looked good at Richmond, not great. But we saw him at the Roval last year, and he was impressive. And I don't see any reason why it should be any different this year.
Yeah, and I'm going way out on a limb here and going Austin Cindric. And I say out on a limb because he's won two of the three road course races this year.
Yeah, he's the road course race this year.
And in the other race, he finished second on fresh tires, and had the race been another couple corners, he would have won. Because that was at Road America, and tires, you know, we thought tires matter at Richmond this past weekend. Road America, from Matt DiBenedetto standpoint, it's like Homestead. So, I got Austin Cindric getting his third victory of the season. Now, Neff, we had an entertaining, like you said earlier, you brought it up, Roval race last year in its first redemption of the event. If we can get anything like that, we're in for a treat. And there is a close points race here. I think, you know, we shouldn't forget about that. And maybe we chat about that a little bit. But you have, Larson on up. I'd say Elliott on up in 7th, 37 to the good. But Larson's 25 to the good. Newman, 14. Blaney, 8. Almirola, 3. Bowman's minus 1. Boyer's minus 4. Kurt Busch minus 14. Obviously, Newman had a great run in Richmond that we didn't really talk about. I don't know. This is a good points battle. Probably even better than last year.
It's interesting, to say the least. You've got 7 or 8 guys that are all within about 15 points of each other. So it's anything can happen. Stage points are going to be a big deal.
Oh, yeah. They were last year.
You're going to see some guys taking some chances to try to get the stage points. Who knows? But I feel like we're in for another one. I think the chicane being changed on the backstretch, I think, is going to really throw some guys for a loop, because you can't charge that chicane now. Right. You've got to get slowed up if you're going to make it. And I've touted this for months and years that racing is about who can drive the furthest before hitting their brakes and still make the corner. And that is going to be the challenge at the chicane. And I think that's going to be a huge passing opportunity. And the guys that are able to pass there are really going to make some hay. And I'm looking forward to that piece of the track. I think, if anything, I'm going to probably try and camp out there a good bit during the race, because I feel like that spot is where a lot of action is going to go down.
So who do you think advances? We'll get to your pick in a second, but who do you think advances? Because Newman obviously had a great race at Richmond. Best race of the year. Tied his best finish of the year, but from start to finish, he says it is the best race. He's 14 to the good. Blaney, 8. Almirola, 3. Byron's 1 point to the good over Bowman. And, you know, Boyer's 4 back. Busch, 14. And Jones has to win. Do you think either Boyer, Busch, or Jones, or Bowman get in?
You know, I've been on the Busch bandwagon, but after watching Richmond, I don't know. I said it all along that if they could run clean, they would advance rounds. And they ran clean at Richmond and ran like a bag of hammers. I mean, they were terrible. And
He wasn't happy post-race either, when the media availability.
I didn't know what to say, because they just had no speed. And that was shocking. And I mean, Kirk can road race, so I think he's going to have a chance. to get up there. McCall is a very good strategist, so I think he'll put him in position early on in the stages to get himself at the cut line, and then from there we'll see what happens. But I say that, and they got no stage points at Richmond at all. So I'd like to say Bush advances, but I don't think he does. I think Jones is not going to advance. I don't think Bush is going to advance. I don't think Almirola is going to advance. We saw it at Richmond. Missed his pit box and had to back up. When you're fighting at the cutoff, you cannot do that kind of stuff. And I just feel like that team in general has just has been that little bit off this year to where they're not going to be able to take advantage of it. And then the other one I think will be Byron. I just feel like the pressure of this is going to be too much, and I think you're going to see him make a mistake at some point that ends up costing him the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Boyer gets in over Almirola. Byron's a good road racer. I'll give him that. So if he gets out, though, he's 1 point above Bowman going in. Bowman finished fourth in this race last year. For some reason, I think Kirk gets in. It might be a miracle because, you know, you got to think, like, yes, he's going to get stage points probably, but so are a lot of other drivers in his scenario. So he's not really going to gain a ton of stage points, even if he wins the stage. I mean, he might get 10 points, but who knows? Maybe Byron's right behind him in second, getting 9. We've seen that on the road courses all season in places like Pocono. So, strategy is going to be interesting for sure. But as far as the race, Neff, who you got winning?
I said it before, I'll say it again, I'm sticking with my Kyle Busch pick. I think he's, and he'll play it off, but having a win at every track on the circuit is important to him. And since they've added the Roval, that's the one track he doesn't have a win at. So I think he's pushing it. I think he had a car this weekend that if things had gone his way, he would have won, but he'll tell you it wasn't the best car. But I think at the Roval, the driver can make enough of a difference that I think he'll do it and get his win at the Roval.
And I'm going with, Kyle's going to be a good pick. He's going to run towards the top 2, 3, 5 all day. But I think Truex is going to be the guy to beat. I say he sweeps the opening round of the playoffs. That'd be huge because he's already picked up 12 points in this first stage of the playoffs. And I believe he'd be ranked second going into the round of 12 right now. But I think he wins again, gets another 5, and he'll probably be first seed come the round of 12 at Dover. So I got Truex winning. Neff, you mentioned Byron just a minute ago and how you think the pressure might get to him. Like I said, he comes in on the cut line. He's our guest this week on the podcast, so I know you said the pressure might get to him, but how do you feel about him going into the Roval?
I mean, I feel like he's got the talent to do a lot in this sport, and we just got to remember that he's still new, and he's still working through things and still learning, and there's a lot of pressure driving for Hendrick. There's a ton of pressure being into 24, and it takes a while to get that. I think he and Chad are a great pair. It seems like those two have really gelled. And I think that's been good, but I think they're still learning. And that's why I feel like he's a couple years away from where he really starts to show his true potential. But in the end, I think he'll be a champion. And I've been on the Byron bandwagon since I first saw him race because I saw him do things in a Legends car that were amazing. So I'm a believer, but I feel like he's still, it's like a wine. I think he's got to age a couple more years before we're really going to get the full fragrance out of him.
Agreed. I think he's going to be strong this weekend. Like I said, ran well at Sonoma, won a stage, and then also ran well at Watkins Glen until the whole Kyle Busch shenanigans. So as long as he keeps his cool, I think he'll be in decent contention. But let's see what William Byron has to say about the playoffs. Now let's get to my conversation with William Byron.
This weekend at Richmond, you're 9th in points. You kind of hovered around 12th to 14th most of the regular season. Overall, how would you gauge the season so far?
It's been really good. I mean, it's been a huge improvement for me and even us as a team on the 24. So you know, it's been really good. Chad's done a great job to help us progress. And, yeah, I mean, to be, I think we finished 11th in points in the regular season, which is way above our expectation. Or I guess our goal was to be around 12th and to make the playoffs and now be in it and be progressing is really good. So it's been great.
So were you kind of surprised to be 11th? Or?
I mean, I think as the year progressed, no, but there was a point in the season that, yeah, it would have just been nice to be 16th and be in the playoffs. So, you know, it's definitely things really progressed fast for us. And I felt like we went from being kind of hovered around that 16th to 19th in points to right up there in top 12. So that's good.
Now, you've obviously got the four poles this year at three of the marquee races. What's that do to a driver's mentality knowing that you've got the speed, at least for the one lap?
I mean, I don't know if it really changes anything. I think the biggest thing I noticed with the pole awards was how cool it was to, you know, to get them and to accomplish something. And then, you know, going into the race is kind of a little bit more pressure, I think. So I don't know if I really like that as much. I think it's good just to kind of qualify and respectable and go race from there. And I think also it bodes well for your car, too, especially with this package. You know, the short tracks, obviously, qualifying on the pole is a big deal, but the bigger tracks, you know, you want to have the right balance of downforce and everything. So, you know, I think it's just kind of one of those things that we learn from, and you know, we still try to qualify really well. We just we have to gauge how, if it's an impound race, how well we want to do.
This might be a weird question, but then if you're going to qualify well, do you expect to run worse, or you know, worse, yeah, than maybe if you qualified worse, then you'd race better?
No, I think, you know, a lot of the poles that we had were not impound races, so they were you know, kind of qualifying was its own deal. And then Darlington, you know, was just a good lap and a good pole for us. You know, we had a good car there, and it just worked out. So I think it's just been a kind of different for every one of them, and it's been good.
Now, you brought up Chad, obviously, the first year you're working with him full-time. So how has the relationship kind of built since Daytona?
It's been great. We've really progressed and kind of taken it one step at a time, I feel like. And we've gotten from where we were at the start of the year with growing, and kind of everything was new, didn't want to really say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. Whereas now, I think we're much more open, and we also have that notebook that's starting to build. And if we can continue to build the notebook around our team, that's going to help us tremendously, knowing that the rules are probably not going to change that much for next year. So I think we just got to continue to build the notebook and try to make that even better.
Now, Chad always seems to be kind of strict, always down to business. In what ways has he challenged you, either as a person or as a driver?
I mean, you know, I've been at the shop a lot this year, and I think that's pretty normal. I'd like to do that. I'd like to be involved with the post-race debriefs and stuff, and I don't like calling into them and not being present for it. So I would say that's been the biggest thing, is we just have a pretty organized schedule on Tuesdays, and that's helped us as a team, I think, just to grow.
What do you feel like the biggest thing you've learned since your rookie year last year?
Everything. I mean, details, you know, just every part of the weekend's been really different for me. You know, I feel like the biggest thing is just I've gone from running 20th on average to running top 12 to 15, you know. So I've improved that much, whether some of that's car, some of that's driver. It's probably both, to be honest. So I think that's the biggest thing I've noticed, is just being in a different bracket of competition, different guys that I'm racing around. And on a good day, you know, you're racing around Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin and guys like that.
Now, obviously, you've come up the ranks really quickly. K&N, 1 year done pretty much. Same with the trucks and Xfinity. Saw a lot of success. So when you get to the Cup Series, obviously, it's, you know, the pinnacle of motorsports.
Yeah.
You probably didn't expect results right off the bat, right?
I didn't. But I think I was a little naive in thinking that it would come a little bit easier, so just with the past results and stuff. But it's very tough. I mean, like, it's, you know, you don't really know what to expect till you get here. And all the preparation and all the work that goes into it is a lot. So it takes a lot to kind of get yourself to that point. And then I feel like once you, like, kind of wrap your arms around what the Cup Series is like, it really comes easier, I guess. So, I don't know. It's just a different way of working. It's a professional sport, and you're doing it at a really high level. It takes a lot of work.
Got it. Now, obviously, we're in the playoffs. Obviously, you want to win the championship. But what would you consider a successful season? First year being in the playoffs.
I think honestly, if we can just make it past the first round, I think so. The immediate goal. I don't really look much further past that. I think there's a lot of things that we could do that are on the horizon or on the distant horizon of making the final eight or whatever would be really cool. And I think we're capable of that. The way we've run for the past 15 weeks, I think, has been top 7 or 8 in points. So I think that we're capable of that. It's just a matter of getting there first, and we got to jump this first hurdle. So that's really the only thing I'm thinking about.
So you just kind of take it race by race, week by week?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's as we saw at Vegas, anything can happen, and it's not worth speculating or daydreaming about what you can possibly accomplish till it actually happens.
How much do you feel like the intensity, if at all, did pick up once Vegas came around?
For sure. I mean, the restarts and everything were a lot more exciting, a lot more intense, and it's a totally different atmosphere.
Now, I asked you a similar question, Andy, but obviously you have experience in this format in trucks and Xfinity. So can you take anything from those years and apply it to the playoffs this year?
Yeah. I think if I get closer to the championship race, I can, because I think that what I did at Phoenix and what I did at Homestead and the Xfinity car can really pay off. But outside of that, I don't really know. I mean, I think it's a totally different deal. But if I do get to that point, I feel like I'll have not that much pressure on me to perform, and I can just go after it.
Do you consider yourself a dark horse, though? Because, I mean, it seems like you have the speed to go pretty far with this thing.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I don't think anyone really expects much out of me or us, because it's the first time for me in the playoffs. So sure. I mean, I think be an accomplishment just to continue to be a threat and see how far that goes.
Forget the playoffs, but what are some of your primary goals as a driver throughout the rest of the year?
I think we've met most of them, but I think obviously we want to win a race. That would be great. And then get to probably 2 or 3 more top fives would be great, and just continue to run the way we are. I mean, I think those are the immediate goals for sure.
Cool, man. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. So there you have it. Fun conversation there with William Byron, talking all about the playoffs in his first season, making the postseason with Hendrick Motorsports. That interview was recorded on Friday at Richmond Raceway, prior to the 24 team having a bad night on Saturday, and now entering the cutoff race to the round of 16, right there on that bubble, 1 point ahead of his teammate Alex Bowman. Really enjoyed chatting Richmond with Neff, and he's dead on when he says that Saturday night's race was a typical Richmond race, as it's always been hard to pass at that short track, but even probably more so this year around with the new aero package, running the 750 horsepower, but also the bigger spoiler. Because really there wasn't a lot of comers and goers, which was as expected if you listen to the media availability on Friday. But that's it for this week's show. Again, and make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And please don't be afraid to leave us a 5-star rating. But until next week's show, where we review the Roval, we out.